Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, Owlpost, for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and I'm very, very glad to have with me the wonderfully talented and just you just look so bright and shiny today, Drea Kaufman.
Yay, we're recording when the sun is up.
I know, isn't it great?
Yeah, we normally record in the evening, and it's more afternoon-y today, so.
Yeah, it just worked out better for both of us. Yeah, so it's nice. Like, I'm looking out the window right now, and it's partly sunny. So,
so exciting, sure, you guys. Like, everyone should be as excited as we are.
I don't understand. But you know what is exciting, Drea?
That we have more reviews?
Yes. Yay! We do have more reviews. And I don't know how you say this name. It's C-A-P. T-S-F-U-F-P. So I'm not sure how you say that name, but they said, a lovely companion, 5 stars. I bought my house-specific copy of book one at King's Crossing and read chapter by chapter whilst listening to this episode by episode. It's a great way to re-experience rereading the great Harry Potter series, and it makes it even more magical of a journey. Wow, that's awesome.
Yay.
And so cool that they bought their copy of the book at King's Crossing. Like, I want to go.
I know.
I want to go to there.
I know. If this is the same person that said something, I think, on Twitter a couple weeks ago, too, they said they bought their house-specific copy. So it's, like, themed for their Hogwarts house, which I also thought was really cool, and I was super jealous
of. Awesome. Now I just want to say, you know, I mean, feel free to send us anything Harry Potter related from the United Kingdom. That would be fantastic. Drea and I will not say no to that at all. But
we really
appreciate the review. That's great. Thank you so much. Now the next review is from Geeky Teacher Robogarge.
You're doing your best, buddy.
I'm doing my
doing
best.
Better than I really would.
But hey, they said best Harry Potter podcast, 5 stars. They said, this is by far the best Harry Potter podcast out there. I've tried many, but these two take the cake. Their insight into each chapter of the book is great. While I've read and listened to each story several times, rereading while listening to the podcast is a great little chunk of my time each week. I can't wait to start hearing their thoughts on the interconnectedness of little bits and pieces sprinkled in here and there. This is a must listen for any fan of Harry Potter and Friends. Keep up the good work, folks. Man, that review just makes me feel swell. I mean, I don't know about you, but
Both of those made me feel real swell. Not gonna lie.
It's so nice. It's so cool. We really appreciate that. And then the last review says, Harry Potter Fix, 5 stars. And it's from Yenard Yeardley. And they said, love the podcast, have all the books in both hard and paperback, have the books on audio, on cassette and CD, and we have listened to the audiobooks every night to take us to sleep for the past 10 years. After finding this podcast this year, we haven't listened to the books till now. I've listened to the podcast nightly before bed. You two bring such energy and love to the podcast. Only complaints make them longer. Team Slytherin. Well, that is very nice of you to say, and I will also say that my wife does the same thing. She listens to the books while going to sleep every single night. So she has listened to the books more time than I ever be able to read them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Both of you guys are impressive.
Yeah. But what's so cool is that we only need a few reviews now for our review contest.
We're up to
five?
Can win. Right? We're up to 5 of the 10 now, I think. Come on, guys. We're so close.
And the faster you get the reviews in, the faster you could win. So
Yay.
We would love for you to be the one who's going to get the copy of Harry Potter, A History of Magic. So get those reviews in and we'll do the drawing. We really appreciate everybody going to Apple Podcasts to do this for us. Now, keep them coming. And as they come, we'll definitely make sure to keep shouting you out for what you're saying about the show. We really appreciate it. It does. It really does make us feel good. So it. I feel like I just had chocolate after a Dementor attack.
Aww. So,
and you can find us all over the place. Follow us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdparty, which is a great place to like us. You'll see all the shows there that we're doing. And it's a great place to talk to us about the shows. We post the shows each and every week, and you can comment under there, and Drea and I will definitely talk back to you. So that's so much fun. You can find us online at thenerdparty.com, which is also a place to check out where you can send us an email. Go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose Owlpost, and that will go to Dre and I, and we can talk to you about whatever you had in mind. And it's a great place to actually talk to us if you wanted to talk maybe a little more specifically about connections that we aren't talking about just yet. And of course, you know, you can find us on Twitter. Again, hit us up on Twitter, #Owlpost, and we love catching up with people there. Like, it's a blast. So, I really forgot how much is in this next chapter that we're talking about today. Weasley's Wizard Wheezes, which, say that three times fast. And I love that the moment that Harry gets out of the fireplace, both of the twins are on him. Did he eat it? Did he eat it? Did he eat it? It's just awesome.
It's hilarious. I love that this is one of those chapters too where you pick up right where you left off. There's no sort of like, they went through the fireplace and now time has elapsed and we're picking up at a different part. Like, we're literally picking up exactly where we left off of him. And I like the description of him traveling with the flu powder and then the flu network, because he gets this dizzying effect and he's trying really hard to focus and do this correctly so he doesn't, you know, get sick or look dumb. And I feel like, again, that's just really real, that if, you know, I was traveling through a fireplace, I would probably be going, all right, focus, you can do this, it's okay, you know. So I even like that we got a little bit of a description about that. It wasn't super long or anything, but and the Weasleys, we actually meet more Weasleys here, which is really exciting.
You know, I have to say, so the fact that we meet Charlie and Bill is wonderful. And this is also one of those places where she adds a little bit of context to some of the things that we've heard before, but she finds a fun way to give it back to us. So when Harry meets Charlie, he sees how, you know, the Weasley family has some similarities between them. But some of the boys are taller and lankier than others, and Charlie happens to be one of the boys who's a bit stockier a bit more like the twins, which is so funny because in our minds, we always think the twins now from the movies, and they're just tall, lanky dudes. But for what she wrote, that's not what they were. And so that was interesting to go back and reread that point.
Yeah, because my understanding from the book is in the movies, Ron and the twins' body descriptions are kind of switched, where Ron's a little stockier in the first few movies until he sort of sprouts up near the end. And the twins are always these kind of tall beanpoles. My understanding of the book is they're kind of flipped. Like, Ron's kind of this gawky kid, and the twins are a little stockier. So it's, you get,
which makes kind of sense because they're beaters, you know,
right?
And like that. Yeah.
And then he becomes a keeper because he's, he grows tall and big so he can cover more of the gold. Yeah. So anyway, I don't mean to ruin anything there for anybody. Sorry about that. So the descriptions are different, and it's nice that they all have similarities, but it does show sort of a diversity among the family. I like her description of Bill with the ponytail and the fang earring, which I think is hilarious. And, you know, there's just a few things there that like make him kind of look like a wild child, but he's so quiet, respectful, and kind. But he's got this, like, I almost get this like kind of rocker look from him.
Yes.
And I love that it comes up later in the chapter too. And I think it's Ginny who asks him, like, are you allowed to dress like that at work? And then he's like, ah, they don't care what I look like, you know?
Yes.
It's pretty great.
It's really cool because, yeah, she does even say that he looks like he wouldn't be out of place at a rock concert. So I kind of think of him as is looking a bit like a hipster, you know?
Yes.
With the boots on, the ponytail.
Give him some Ray-Bans or whatever the wizarding equivalent is.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that either of us can talk wearing our Ray-Bans, but
yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, he definitely seems like the guy who's got his Wayfarers in his, pocket there. So
flannel.
When it's sunny. Yeah, it's
no insult
he's
to any
cool.
hipsters. If you want to look at a picture of my husband, he's wearing flannel and Ray-Bans. So.
I love flannel. But no, I just totally think the descriptions here and meeting them is so much fun. And it is funny, too, because you can tell they're older and they're not crazy anymore. They've got their own lives, their own jobs, and they seem like very cool, calm customers, you know? And so it's just neat to finally get to meet them because we've been hearing about them for a long time. And so I also think it's great, of course, when Mr. Weasley gets back because he immediately just starts yelling at the boys for what they've done and how wrong it was and how they shouldn't have done that and how it's not funny and how he spends his whole life, you know, working against this kind of thing. And it's exactly kind of one of the things that we mentioned, I think, at the end of the last episode, where this is what he does for a living is fight against this. And his boys doing this has made him very angry. And it's interesting because we don't see Mr. Weasley get all that angry that often, but he is just livid here. It's like he had seen A Wrinkle in Time at the movie theater or something.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, 602 Club joke.
If you haven't seen that movie, don't. That's all I have to say. Wait for it to come to Netflix. It won't be long.
And it'll put you to sleep, so.
Yeah. But, and what's so interesting is how angry he gets. And then at the same time, we kind of, you know, he's like, I'm going to tell your mother. And then maybe three sentences later, Rawling says something to the effect of, like, he had no intention of telling her. Like, he was angry, but he wasn't angry enough to tell Molly. And I thought that was really funny. Like, he was angry, but he was only so angry. It's like, it was maybe a teeny bit of a nod towards the fact that he maybe felt good that his boys were sticking up for Harry. Like, he maybe felt a little bit of, like, okay, it was harmless, but, like, let's not do that again.
Well, and I like, too, because, they do say, Dad, it has nothing to do with the fact that he's a muggle. It has to do with the fact that he's a git. And they're like, and Harry's like,
he is,
really,
Mr. Weasley.
Mr. Weasley. He is. And he's like, I don't care. You know, like he does the classic dad thing. But no, I think you are right. I think there is a part of him after what he just experienced with Harry at the Dursleys' home. He has every right and should be yelling at his sons right now for what they did. Yeah. It was wrong. Very, very wrong, boys. And yet at the same time, yes, you don't want to tell Molly. And I love how Molly's like, well, if it has anything to do with Weasley's wizard wheezes, like just had it with these boys and their like lack of drive beyond creating what she thinks of as just nuisance.
Yes. And that was an excellent pronunciation because I would not have been able to put those three words together that easily. I think it's so funny how she's got, I don't know, sometimes when you read about families in books, you kind of find that it's very matriarchy or very patriarchy based, that there's, you know, mom runs the household or dad runs the household. Like, there's always like kind of a dynamic. It happens a lot when you watch TV and movies and stuff like that too. I feel like in this particular situation, there isn't that though. I mean, they definitely have their own, each of the parents sort of have their own areas that they own, but I definitely get this like unified parenting front, even when they sort of disagree. So I kind of like that they try. I think, you know, Molly does a lot around the house, but I still feel like they're together for the most part on most things. And, you know, it's kind of a different family dynamic than you're kind of used to seeing. I guess we're also not used to seeing strong families in books. A lot of times your characters come from dysfunctional families, which is part of the character development. So it is really nice to see this nice sort of functional. They're odd, but they're functional, you know, and they love each other. And I could not think of anything happier than having dinner al fresco in the garden with 10 other of my favorite people and just eating some humble food. And like, it just sounded amazing. Like, I want to go do that for dinner now. Like, if anyone wants to come to Arizona and come have dinner al fresco in the garden and you can find a garden, I will join you.
Oh, man. You mean you don't have a nice, like, pergola in your backyard?
Filled with greens that make it through 120 degree summers?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bummer. No, I think you're absolutely right. You know, and I like what you called out about the idea that, you know, we're not used to seeing strong families. And, you know, it's interesting for all the struggles, too, that Rowling went through in her life. And I think that you can see the way that she writes the Weasleys is still, everybody would like to be in a family like this where, look, it's normal. Everybody loves each other in the family, but there are times when everybody wants to kill each other too. And she does that so well, and she doesn't hide from that fact at all. And I think that's what makes them such a loving family is, you know, they have their disagreements and they, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, they genuinely are a loving family. I don't know about Percy, but, you know,
not at this point, at least.
Yeah, not at this point, but it is really great. And I love, too, how Harry and Ron and Hermione, who's there as well, and Ginny, they are like, let's go upstairs. And Harry, this is where we're going to be. You're going to be staying, you know, and it's great because Harry asks about the Weasley's wizard Wheezes. And Ron and Ginny are just laughing. And, of course, Hermione's not. But they're talking about how, well, I mean, you know, we just hear a lot of, like, loud bangs and stuff from their room. But who knew they had been inventing things? Like, I just love the idea that we just thought they were making noise. But these boys are actually, I mean, as silly as it is, they are using their magical ability to create some pretty cool magical things. And even, you know, down the line, spoiler alert, Hermione is actually going to be kind of impressed with some of the things that they come up with.
Even in this book, because, we're going to see a couple and see, it's interesting. You're going to learn. I mean, I feel like this is kind of the first time we got introduced to owls in terms of the tests.
The ordinary wizarding levels.
Yeah, and how those kind of are important, you know, and that they're disappointed they didn't do better. The twins didn't do better on those. But I think that the twins are slowly going to become, especially in this book and in the next book, more of this symbol of non-education based smart, right? Non-book smart smarts. And so I think this is sort of that first, like, hint at that, like, oh, we have these things that they've just invented. They're creative and they're new, but they're, you know, they don't really do much right now, but make jokes. But we're going to see later in this book how when they apply themselves, they actually can be quite brilliant. So,
well, and it, I love that as they're talking about this, they're on the way up, and this is where we first get Percy in the chapter, and he just storms out of his room and looks out like, y'all stop making all that noise. And Ron's like, we were just walking by. It wasn't like we were on parade or something.
He says, like, all of you guys storming up and down the stairs. And he's like, we weren't doing that. We were just walking. But sorry.
Well, and this is going to start something that's going to be funny throughout the book of Percy being so just obsessed with his work and taking it so seriously and trying to climb up the ladder there at work. And, you know, of course, everybody's just making fun of him with his, you know, standardizing cauldron thickness. And it just, you know, Percy just kind of comes off as a little twerp right now, because he is, he's acting like one, and he's treating everybody else as if they're a second class citizen already. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch Percy's development in the next few books and to see what happens, because this really sets him on a trajectory, to maybe be at odds with the rest of the family down the line, because he's putting work in front of everybody else.
And I feel like this is something that a lot of families, especially bigger families, can kind of relate to. And that, you know, especially some of the families that are like the Weasleys that I've known in my life, there's always one member who wants to be different, who wants to forge their own way, who feels that they've got different ideas or strengths or directions for what they want to see in their life that does not align with their family. And I feel like this is Percy's way of being rebellious, as he feels like he is like Ron in that he's kind of embarrassed about where his family comes from, being poor. And so he feels like he's given this opportunity to prove his worth, you know, unlike his dad who plays with muggles and he finds that embarrassing. You know, I think it's just he's that one family member that loves his family, but is very embarrassed by them. And
yeah,
it's, you know, so it leads to him being kind of snarky and kind of rude. And I feel like a lot of people can relate to that. So it's really interesting to see it starting again and see the other Weasleys get kind of tossed in the mix, and seeing that it is kind of just Percy going out on his own. And it for me, it made me wonder if Bill and Charlie went through this ever, and have worked their way out of it and found their peace with whatever they've decided to do. So Percy's such an interesting character.
It does seem as though that this, that those two didn't really seem to go through that, because we don't ever get any indication. I'll spoil it for you. We don't get any indication that Bill or Charlie were ever like Percy has been. So that is that, but that is an interesting thing. Like, it would have been interesting if she had gotten to spend more time with them to see what their psychology was like.
Yeah, we don't get a ton of background on Bill or Charlie right now, and don't really get a ton by the time we're done with the series. I think they're good characters, but they're definitely like tertiary characters. They're quite removed. So, you know, we don't really learn much about that half of the Weasley family, but
I do like too. This is a place where we also get some information about how he's working for this person named Mr. Crouch, and it's Mr. Crouch this and Mr. Crouch that, and well, that's a name that's going to be important. So just keep that in your cap.
In this book, in particular.
Yes, and I also love how they start to ask the question about Sirius, and then they realize Ginny's in the room, and so Hermione just kind of covers it up with, oh, you think we should go downstairs and help your mom? Like, we didn't need to say that.
Just, now.
Yeah, because Ginny's just looking at them all like, huh? And this is also the book, too, like, where Ginny becomes kind of part of the group. Like, she is old enough now to where Ron and Harry and Hermione kind of accept her as being part of their little group a lot more than they have before, which is kind of nice.
I'm going to disagree. I get what you're saying. I feel like Ron never really accepts her as part of the group because it's always his little sister. And well, I think yes. Harry is afraid to accept her as part of the group, which we'll learn more about later. But I think this is the book where her and Hermione sort of fuse their friendship. And it definitely,
because
you know, in this book and in the next couple of books, Ginny's going to establish her own little social circle. They all overlap, but I think this is definitely where you get a good bond between Hermione and Ginny, because now they're kind of old enough to relate to each other. But I don't know that she ever becomes part of their group. Like, I never really read it that way. But she becomes, she grows her own social circle and it overlaps. So she gets more of a character herself than, you know, she's had in the past, where she's just kind of been the sister who's in the background, or even in the second book, she's the damsel in distress, you know? But I think this is the first time that, you know, this becomes the summer that Hermione and Ginny are like, oh, we can be friends and we get along and we can relate. And
yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's interesting. I guess kind of what I don't mean like she's like part of the Trinity, so it's a quadrilogy now. I just mean more of that.
She shows up socially.
Yeah, she's a lot more readily accepted by them. It's always going to be awkward. For a variety of reasons. So
that I can't wait to talk about.
Yeah. So, I do love that they go down to help Mrs. Weasley, and then they realize, look, this is not a good plan because she's still in a mood. So they go outside, and it's just joyous. I mean, Bill and Charlie are having a blast because they've bewitched the tables that they're supposed to be setting up, and they're battling them in the air. And it's just like, you know, the kids are laughing and Crookshanks is chasing gnomes around, and it's just kind of this wonderful, beautiful experience. And then, like you said, they sit down to have dinner, and it's just conversation and food, and it's the first time that Harry's had food like this pretty much for most of the summer since he's been living on, like, stale cake, you know, that people have sent him and everything. So, and then it just becomes there's some great and interesting conversations that happen around the table about different people that, you know, Mr. Weasley's working with, and interesting things that are apparently coming. There's something big happening after the Quidditch World Cup that we learn about. We get the first mention of Ludo Bagman. I mean, it's a very busy table.
It is. Like, and I'm surprised that Bertha Jenkins doesn't sort of pique Harry's interest, because mm-hmm. Percy and Mr. Weasley are talking about how she's been missing now for, I think he says, a month, and no one seems terribly concerned, but she's been missing. And if you remember, you should remember that name from the first chapter where, you know, Voldemort and Pettigrew are talking, and the housekeeper is there, and, you know, they mentioned something about Bertha Jenkins. So I find it interesting that Harry didn't sort of hear that name, and it didn't like resonate with him at all. So, because I was like, ooh, yeah. Ooh, 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 ooh. I was like, I was waiting for that one.
The fact that somebody working at the ministry lost one of their workers, and they just kind of like, oh, she gets lost all the time. It's Bertha. But, you know, you're right. It is interesting because Harry should remember this. But it is also the thing at the end of the chapter, he remembers the reason that he was writing Sirius in the first place, because he ends up talking to the conversation keeps going, and him and Ron and Hermione are finally able to really talk. And he doesn't want to talk to them about it now because he's just feeling too happy and peaceful. And when you think about the scene as it's playing out, he's with his best friends in the world. He's with a family that makes him feel a part of the family. And Harry has got to be kind of on cloud nine in a lot of ways, because as we've seen, he hasn't experienced this kind of thing very often.
It's true.
And so this scene for him, you know, I mean, when you think about it, this is old hat for the Weasleys, right? They have family dinner all the time. You know, Hermione has her parents, and they seem to be wonderful parents. So, you know, for Harry though, this is new and this is different, and it's kind of beautiful for him. So it's not surprising, you know, that he wouldn't want to ruin that by talking about, you know, Voldemort.
True. I just didn't get any sort of reaction from him. Maybe it was more along the lines of when you have a dream, you don't always remember your dream. And he sort of felt like that was a dream, you know? From what we can tell, yeah. It was sort of depicted as a dream. So maybe he doesn't really remember it. Or maybe he was too far down the table to have heard it. I don't know. Still, I picked up on
it.
I don't know.
Yeah, and it could have been something that he wasn't necessarily paying attention to at that point as well. I mean, Because right before that, I mean, Mrs. Weasley is complaining to Bill about his long hair and his silly, you know, earring. And, you know, and Ginny's like, well, I kind of like it, Mom. You know, like it's almost as long as Professor Dumbledore's hair, you know. And then the twins are, of course, talking about Quidditch and who's going to win against it's Ireland versus Bulgaria, you know, and all that. So, I mean, it you can understand the way she sets up the table. And the conversations going on, how you might just kind of miss something. It kind of reminds me of, have you seen While You Were Sleeping?
Yeah.
In the family dinner that happens there. You know, Mary mashed them. These mashed potatoes are so creamy. You know, like, Spain has good beef. You know, like, just people just
everywhere,
talking over each
over
other.
Everything.
Yeah,
yeah,
so.
Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
But I love, though, the way that she drops so many things in this chapter that are going to be important later on.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot in this chapter. If you
haven't
read yet, so for our listeners who haven't read on yet, go back, make sure you read this chapter very thoroughly and pay attention, because there's a lot that comes up in here that you're going to want to pay attention to for not just the rest of this book, but even going forward. So.
Yes. All the names of people that they talk about, you're going to want to check those out and remember them, because they're going to be important. One of the funny things is I know you're not like a huge sports fan, but it is very funny because as she explains who is in the Quidditch World Cup and then the teams that lost and, you know, like how England got trounced and it was disturbing and, you know, Scotland was slaughtered by Luxembourg and all these things. Like, it's very funny because it does kind of feel very World Cup-ish for soccer. And, you know, those teams it feels right. So she does a good job with creating this World Cup sense, which is a lot of fun, you know, the idea. And it makes sense, too, that Quidditch is so popular that they would have something like this. So, which I can't wait to get to because...
Yay.
At the end of this chapter, the kids are all supposed to go to bed so that they can get up in the morning, because they're going to have to leave early so they can go to the Quidditch World Cup, which is going to start one of the biggest set pieces that she's ever created so far. Like, we really are going to kind of blow the lid off of how big and how massive the Wizarding universe is in this book. And the next few chapters really kind of are awesome for that. So I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to be able to talk through them, and I'm excited to read through them too, because there's a lot that happens in like the next 3-4 chapters. There's just so much that happens. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
The next 4 are really big.
They
handle what the movie covers in about 5 or 10 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you then and talk to you about maybe somebody's Reddit ahead or anything else that's going on, where can they find you?
Sure. If you want to come find out why I don't recommend you see Wrinkle in Time, you can find the link to that on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of the above. Or you can just come chat with me on Twitter at PCFcheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
Well, you could find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. You can also find me on Instagram under the same name. I am here in the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, talking all about Star Wars. It's super fun. Check it out. You're going to love it. You can also find me on the Trek FM network, talking about The Orb with Chris Jones, as well as the 602 Club. We talk about all things geeky. In fact, you know, Drea is going to be there for the next couple weeks talking about some new movies with me, so make sure you check that out. And doing Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney, as we talk all about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.